Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Show here at 88.5 KRFY on this Wednesday, March 6th, and welcome to live radio at our community radio station. I'm Susie Prez, one of your hosts this morning, and...
I'm Chris Bessler, the co-host sitting over here. How are you doing, Susie?
I'm doing great. You know, I saw the sun coming up behind a snow cloud this morning.
A snow cloud?
It looked like a snow cloud because it was all... It was really beautiful, actually.
Yeah, we've been getting some beautiful mornings, and the sunrise is happening earlier now, but still late enough that if you're a regular riser, you're probably going to see some really nice shows in the morning. Yeah.
Yep, so. I'm loving it, but we have something else that's coming up that could change that a little bit. We can talk about that in a moment. We have a really fun show planned for you today. It has two elements to it. Do you want to talk about what we have planned, Chris?
Well, we're going to start off with talk about the levy election that is coming up next Tuesday. That's March 12th. And we have a pre-recorded interview with Sean Woodward, the superintendent of schools, as well as Geraldine Lewis, one of the school trustees. And they're going to be talking about what's going to be on the ballot and why the school district chose to put forward a proposed school levy at this time. So hang on for that. That's coming in just a couple minutes. And then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have the last half of the show dedicated to a talk with Shannon Williamson. She's the executive director of the Lake Pondere Waterkeeper. And we're going to be talking specifically about the proposed second railroad bridge that's Burlington Northern Santa Fe is proposing to build.
Yep, there we go. And we had the opportunity to sit down with Sean Woodward and Geraldine Lewis on Monday, so we had a recorded interview,
yep,
as you mentioned.
Yep.
And that will be, it's just a lot of information about the levy, and it's a little bit of delineation on their part since they're the host of the vote, the election. So we also have a couple of other things to announce. From Eric Ridgway, he's calling, Panhandle Animal Shelter is seeking volunteers to help with the move from their storage facility to their new storage place, right? Yeah. Next to their the Panhandle Animal Shelter secondhand store. So they have this great big new building, and they have to move all the stuff that they've been storing. And they're going to do the move on Saturday and Sunday, that's March 9th and 10th, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eric will be there both days helping coordinate that effort. And if you're interested in knowing more, he put his phone number. I guess I could give his phone number. That's 208-265-5412. He said all you need to do is bring community-minded people and anyone who loves animals. Come on and help move all this stuff.
And bring in a pair of gloves, too.
Pair of gloves, yeah. And a truck,
yep.
If you have one.
And so just helping move stuff. Many hands make light work, as we say. So anybody that could come and volunteer for that would be much appreciated.
There you go. And from the Sandpoint City Minute, we have, it's the city council meeting tonight. It's March 6th at 5 p.m. at 1123 Lake Street. They have an agenda that you can look at on their website, but also some of the business at hand. They'll be presenting the audited financial statement presentation. They'll be talking about the downtown revitalization final phase and transportation system plan update, amongst other agenda items. So that's the city council meeting tonight at 5:30. At the city council chambers. I haven't even said the weather yet, have I?
Yeah, I was going to say, what's happening with the weather here the next few days?
Wow, it's changed. It changes daily. And then you think one thing's going to happen. Well, now it's currently 32 degrees from the National Weather Service. Today, we have a 50% chance of snow and patchy blowing snow, and then chance of rain snow. High today, 35. Tonight, we have a 90% chance of rain, snow, then snow with a low of 26. And they're looking at a possibility of 2 to 4 inches. But yesterday, that was 1 to 2 inches, and now it's 2 to 4. We'll see, won't we? Thursday, we can expect 60 to 30% diminishing chance of showers, as they say, or snow, with a high of 35. And on Thursday night, patchy freezing fog, low of 21. it looks like in the future. I see some sunshine and I see some snowflakes.
Yeah, so it's kind of the classic late winter, early, almost spring sort of weather we get around here. A couple other things going on outside. The sunrise this morning was at 6:19 a.m. It'll set tonight at 5:36 p.m. Our days are getting longer every day. Over the course of last week, we've gained 25 minutes of daylight, so that's much welcomed. And there's an event coming up Sunday. It's daylight savings time starts again, so you want to turn your clocks ahead 1 hour on Sunday, officially at 2 a.m. A couple other things. New moon is tonight, and then on Sunday, check out the skies if it's clear. Look for a waxing crescent moon in the western sky. And then right nearby that, you're going to see a red star that's just a little above that little sliver of moon. That's Mars. So Mars is going to come back into view. So as always, there's neat things to be seen up in our night sky. When we have a lot of night, I like to talk about looking up because we have some beautiful skies here when we get clear weather. A couple other things going on. Of course, we mentioned that the levy election's coming up. We have an interview related to that in just probably about 60 seconds or so. But there's something interesting happening this Thursday, March 7th, 7 p.m., Idaho Public Television is going to be showing a brand new film. It's called Pondere Country. And it's part of their Outdoor Idaho weekly show that they have. But it's going to be a sweeping look at the lake's geology, fishery, history, and culture. And they talked to a bunch of local folks, including historian Nancy Rank, author Jane Fritz, fish and game officer Kathy Cousins and Chip Corsi and Andy Ducks and the geologist Mark McFadden, among others that are featured in this film. So that's going to be really cool. We're going to be seeing our place light up the television screen here. That's Thursday, 7 p.m. on Idaho Public Television.
So that's the 7th, tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Thanks for letting us know that, Chris. And it is time to get to our recorded interview. We have a lot to talk about later. We'll come back and have our live interview with Shannon Williamson from the Lake Pondere Waterkeeper. Stay with us. But right now, we want to present to you an interview with Sean Woodward and Geraldine Lewis from Lake Pondere School District about the upcoming supplemental Operation Levy. So here you go, folks. We'll be back in 26 minutes, but you can listen to this informational interview.
And we're here now with Sean Woodward. He's superintendent for the Lake Pondere School District, and Geraldine Lewis. She is a trustee on the Board of Trustees. Geraldine, thanks for being here.
Hello. Thanks, Sean.
And Sean as well, yes.
Hello. Thank you for inviting us.
So we have a vote coming up. It's this next Tuesday as this airs. We're actually taping this a couple days early. But the vote is going to be March 12th, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. at all the regular polling places is where people go to vote on this upcoming school levy.
Yeah.
Geraldine, I thought it would be good to start with you. Give us a history of the levy in our district and, you know, why the trustees decided to put that forward.
Thanks, Chris. Hey, it's great to be here. And we have had a lot of support from this community in the past. The last 7 supplemental levies have passed with a very solid support from the Sandpoint area and surrounding areas. We feel that this is a community who understands the importance of the levy, what it provides for this district. As you mentioned, a third of our operating budget comes out of this levy. So we communicate with the community every 2 years on this very same position.
Okay. Well, let's jump into that. A third of the district's operating budget basically comes from this levy that's approved every couple years. What specifically will this levy be funding this year?
Yeah. So as in years past, we have a list of things that the levy is funding. And most of what we spend our dollars on from a levy standpoint is actually staff. So roughly 83% of our operating budget goes towards staff. So you can imagine the levy is no different. A lot of people ask me about that number and say, well, geez, isn't that a little bit high? Is that irregular? And The answer is no, absolutely not. Nationwide, the average school district, roughly 83 to 85% of their budget is people, which actually makes sense. We're also funding with this levy, and we'll get into this a little bit deeper in a few minutes. We are funding wage and salary increases for employees. We are wanting to be more regionally competitive, and this will allow us to do that. All of our academic and athletic extracurricular activities are funded by the levy. Our technology, our curriculum materials, our staff training, and so on and so forth. So you can see that we depend an awful lot on this levy. The other piece that you might say, well, wow, a third of your operating budget is coming from the levy. It is more expensive to have a school district of almost 4,000 students with 12 schools. It's actually unusual. So this levy also allows us to operate our small rural schools as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the number that kind of sticks out, I think, to a lot of people is how large a part of the overall budget is. Third of the budget is derived from this levy. How does that compare with other school districts?
Yeah, so it's I'm not totally sure. There's a lot of school districts that, just like ours, they actually qualify for what's called a permanent levy. And to qualify for a permanent levy, you have to depend on at least 20% of your revenue must come from local tax dollars. I don't have the numbers as far as from a percentage standpoint, but what I do have, I have a comparison as far as, well, are we paying more taxes than our surrounding school districts based on the simple fact that so much of the operating budget is dependent upon local taxpayers. And I want to share a quick example of our tax rates compared to others in this area. So we're currently at $170 per $100,000 of net taxable value. That is our tax rate. Whereas the Lakeland School District, they are at $824 per $100,000 of net taxable value. So you can see that there's quite a vast difference between our school districts. And one of the things that we benefit from is actually we're a property rich district. So we spread out those taxes among our tax base is just very, very broad. So we benefit from that. With this increase, we would be at $221 per $100,000 of net taxable value. Again, as compared to Coeur d'Alene, they're at about $223. Lakeland, again, is at $824. Boundary County, $342. So we will remain around 50% below the state average, even with this increase.
So a number I've seen for districts around the state is that 83% of school districts do have levies in place. Geraldine, why don't you address this one? So the idea that our levy is such a important part of the school budget, it's typical around the state and just the way Idaho funds schools.
It absolutely is. And this is one of the things that, well, changed at the state legislative level in 2006. It is one of the few taxing entities that every 2 years has to be voter approved. So other taxes that we pay in this county don't require voter approval, but education does require voter approval every 2 years. And even at the state level, they recognize that in order to provide equal, fair education to every student, local communities are going to have to require some funding through levies. So it's just a given. It's a standard operating procedure, if you will, for almost every district in this area. I think we've heard that there's two districts that do not have levies in place right now, and they're both very small. One of them has 2 students and one of them has 18 students. That just shows you it is a common factor for funding education in the state of Idaho. And in fact, one way of looking at it is that we are given that a privilege by our state for us to decide how to spend our tax dollars and to decide how much education matters to us. We get that privilege every 2 years of voting, you know, for education.
Sean mentioned an interesting factoid that it's possible to make levies permanent, but our school district, our board of trustees, have elected not to go that route and request a permanent levy. Is that correct?
At this stage, we are eligible to go before the voters for it. The board of trustees, there's five of us, up to this time, we have not opted for that. We're going to continue to have the conversation because every year it's important to discuss the pros and cons of it and what it would mean for our district and our budgeting process. So we'll be looking at it again, I'm sure, probably later in the spring. Have that conversation.
Okay. But the point for this levy, it's not
it
a permanent
It is not
request.
On the table at this time.
Okay. Well, one question that's raised about the levy is the amount of the increase. Now, the levy is going to be $12,700,000 each year. And that's an increase from the current levy, I think, is $8,700,000. So this amounts to a large percentage increase. The number figure I've seen is 49%. Sean, is that accurate? And you know, how would you address this question about the size of the increase?
Yeah, two things. First, number one, I think it's really important to address the fact that we are indeed increasing it. And the thing that we heard over and over and over again from our community members through survey data, as well as stakeholder engagement meetings that were very well attended, and it wasn't, as has been stated in letters to the editor, just staff members engaged in the engagement meetings or the surveys, but an equal number of just community members at large without children in the school district. So over and over again, we heard that you need to be, people get it, you need to be competitive at least with wages and salaries if you're going to be able to recruit and keep talented people in your school district. And one thing that we're having year in and year out, our employment pools are getting smaller and smaller and smaller, so much to the point that we're having to hire people without proper certification, which you can do in Idaho by law, as long as they are working towards their certificate. Now, we've hired great people over the years that way, but we do not prefer to hire people that way. We want deep and rich employment pools. So that's part of the increase, but a large part of the increase is actually that. And what it will do, it will allow us to be competitive with Post Falls, Lakeland, as well as Coeur d'Alene school districts. Now, I mentioned a little bit ago about we have a property-rich district, and an increase like this, you might think, wow, 49%, what does that mean to me when it comes to my home value and what I will pay? Well, the projected cost for an average homeowner, if you will, with an assessed valuation of $250,000, which real value, if you were trying to sell that house, would be around a $300,000 home. But the assessed valuation, $250,000, this is under $7 per month increase from the current levy. So it's at $6.92 per month on average. And if you want to check yours out, just go to lposd.org, and we actually have a levy calculator there that you can see what it would cost you.
Yeah, you look in the left column, you'll see some links there, and you can go in and compute how much the increase would mean to you with your particular situation.
So I want to talk a little bit about that increase. It is a big jump. It's a lot for people to try and wrap their heads around and understand. It's a decision that the five trustees made. We, through a lot of conversation, talked about it, and we feel that this is the time that's right to have some salary increases among both the certified, those teachers, and those who are non-certified staff. We have, between full-time and part-time employees, 900 staff members through the district, and this salary increase impacts a large percentage of our population, and it's very important that we have equitable and competitive wages offered to these employees. And our trustees felt the time was right to come to the community and say, hey, this matters. This is an important part of this budget. So,
And we're no different than the county. Very recently, the county did the same thing where they did a salary study, and they had wage and salary increases for their employees. The difference is we're one of the few taxing entities that have to go out for a vote. So we're different with public schools.
Mm-hmm. So with our district having to this point fallen behind in competitive salaries, how does that affect retention rates, the ability to keep good employees?
Yeah, so we did a study on our 4-year retention rates, and currently we're at about, let me just get this correct, right around 70% is our current retention rates to keep people longer than 3 years. This national average, I believe, is 90%. I'm going to turn to that page here. Let's see, the national average is about actually over 90%. We're at a little above 70%, so we keep about 70% of our people on average more than 3 years. And so the retention rate is definitely impacted. Now, I've heard people say, well, gee, it must mean there's something else going on in your organization. Maybe there's a climate, culture, morale. And I would say absolutely not. Every year in every school and department, I require perception surveys to be done so we can have a check on climate, culture, and morale, because it means so much when it comes to teaching and learning to have good morale, of course. And they're through the charts. We do very well in that area. So we do know it's because we're just not competitive enough with wages and salaries anecdotally. And now we're actually requiring exit interviews for every employee. But this is what we're told.
Mm-hmm. And you produce some statistics that I've seen out there that shows that the retention rate in Lake Pend Oreille School District has declined quite a bit since just in the last 4 years, which I size that up mm-hmm. as what's happening in the overall job market. It's there's a lot of employers in Sandpoint that are finding it tough to keep employees because it's become much more competitive.
Exactly. Yeah, we're finding the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, with salaries being higher right across the border, and we're so close to Washington and other areas, it's easy for teachers to migrate away if there's something offered. So we want to be sure we retain those exceptional teachers and reward them the way they should be.
Mm-hmm. And there's a piece tied to that, that with the salaries. Geraldine is right. She mentioned the state of Washington. We're really trying to be competitive with regionally in our state. But just for your listeners' frame of reference, we're trying to get to around $70,000 for our top attainable employee as a teacher. That's 16 years and a master's degree. In the Meade School District and other school districts, it's $98,000. We're not trying to get to $98,000. We're trying to move from 65 up to 70,000 so we can compete with Post Falls, Coeur d'Alene, and Lakeland.
Just so. Competing with our other districts here in Idaho, around mm-hmm. us, not really trying to compete with Washington because they're kind of out of our league in terms of salaries.
Yes, and we just want to use that as a frame of reference, really.
Yeah.
It is the reality.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, this is the morning show on KRFY 88.5, and we're talking this morning with Geraldine Lewis, trustee of the Lake Pend Oreille School District, and Superintendent Sean Woodward. So to get back on this, kind of the numbers here a little bit more, one of the claims that are out there is that the facilities levy is coming up again. And that's the number I've seen used. I have no idea where it's coming from, is that the district's going to be seeking a $39 million facilities levy next year. Is that accurate?
No, and I've seen people are passing out cards and flyers, and I'm sure there'll be ads in the newspaper. And that is stating as fact that we're going to run something in August at $39 million. And people are just making things up. I mean, that's all I can say about that. Here's the real deal. Here's what we're doing. We have a Citizens Facility Advisory Committee. They are open and public meetings. And you can go to our website and watch the two that we've had. You can see that there's no talk of an August $39 million plant facility levy. We've only met twice. We will continue to meet. And I understand where people are getting this. We did have a facility study done, and we actually had someone go through, some value engineers, and look at our schools. And if we decided to try to fix everything in our school district, there is a price tag of around $38 to $39 million, and that wouldn't fix it all, if you will. But I'll tell you one thing that we learned the last time around. We've got a committee of community members now that understand that we heard loud and clear that when we go back out to address our facility needs, we're going to be doing it slowly and one step at a time instead of everything all at once. That's what happened last time around. We learned a lot. So I can tell you that I'm quite confident that the committee, and we're not nowhere near to making a recommendation to the school board, will not go for everything all at once like happened last time. But we still have those facility needs, and we're going to carefully move forward with those plans.
And I will say as a trustee that no, we've not had any dialogue about that yet, and it is out there in the future, but not on the calendar anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that's not changing is the facility needs do exist.
Correct.
That's been well established, and there's a maintenance backlog and also some very aging schools that at some point have to be rectified.
Yep.
Let's another thing I see out there as a matter of critique on this particular levy is choosing a March date for the vote. The criticism being that this is a way to suppress the voter turnout. Why do you choose March, Geraldine?
Well, there are four options: March, May, August, and November.
Only four.
You can't. There's only four. You can't randomly hold an election anytime. The November option is just not practical from the standpoint that the state has not come even close to letting us know what our allocation will be. We would be doing a lot of guesswork, more than necessary. It just is. It's a little too random at that time to try and zero in our own budget. The March option is perfect because it gives us plenty of time before that June signing of all those new teacher contracts. May pushes right up against that time, June 1st, where we're signing our teachers. So that is a very difficult, hard press for us to have the election vote, know that we're going forward. And of course, August isn't a good option for obvious reasons. We're already starting school.
Mm-hmm. There's another piece that is important for people to hear, is that the last time we ran this, we had almost 50% voter turnout. Look at the state averages. That is so high. So people will turn out, and they will turn out in force in this community. Mm-hmm. No matter what month we've run things, people show up because they can vote absentee. They don't have to vote at the polls, et cetera, et cetera. So March is the most responsible time to run it, A, and B, it's been proven that we get high voter turnout when we run it in March anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, got time for a couple more questions here. So there's a new education funding formula plan being worked on, could possibly be implemented in the legislature in Boise this year. Does that change the calculus for a levy?
It does not. A couple questions that I have heard was, number one was, well, wait a minute, isn't there going to be an infusion of dollars into education? And the answer is yes, that's good news. But we actually, in building the levy amount, we already had gotten those budget projections, so we're pretty confident that we knew what was coming in. And the governor was suggesting, let's get our minimum salaries to $40,000, which is great. That's what we want to do. But the governor's budget is only talking about a couple of rungs on our salary schedule. We have 238 or so, roughly in that ballpark, certificated staff members, teachers. The governor's budget would help us with 12 of those staff members. So we have to pay all of our staff, not just those 12. So with the new funding formula, as that comes down and around the corner, we're looking at probably not being a big winner or loser. We'll probably have pretty flat funding. Latest iteration, it looks like we'll get maybe even just a little bit less than anticipated. So it's not a big deal for us.
I think what the public needs to be reminded about with this new funding formula is not that the pie, so to speak, is getting larger. It's that they're redistributing that money. So it's not a bigger pot of money necessarily, but they're really evaluating how it gets distributed to each district. So, you know, there's some thought in place that this is going to be a windfall. It really is going to stay pretty level as far as our own budgeting considerations. Mm.
Elsewhere in the state, some districts will get less and some will get more because it's the nature of this particular proposal.
Yeah.
So what happens if the levy doesn't pass? That's a question that some opponents are kind of criticizing as a, you know, it's a threat, you know, pass it or else. But the reality is with the levy constituting a third of your budget, there would have to be some serious repercussions if the levy failed to pass.
Yeah, so I mean, people don't necessarily like to talk about these things, but if it doesn't pass, yes, we could run it again in May, for sure. I'll tell you right now that if it didn't pass, I'd go back to our board and I'd recommend the exact same amount because that is what we need to be viable into the future. I feel strongly about that. Mm-hmm. But you could run it again in May. We would run it again in May. But in the meantime, we'd have to figure out what to do with our staffing, et cetera. So we'd immediately have to implement our reduction in force because we have policy that dictates when we do that. So we'd lay off roughly 300 people and hope that it would pass in May. And then we'd also be consolidating schools. You cannot close schools without a community-wide vote, but you can consolidate. And by that, I mean you could keep all of the kindergarten kids at Southside Elementary School and have the rest of them go to Sagal, and we could fit them all into Sagal Elementary School. Mm-hmm. Do we want to do that? No, I 100% support and believe in our rural schools and our small schools. But without a third of our budget, we could not operate all 12 of our schools. So we'd be consolidating schools, mm-hmm. and we'd be laying off staff. And when you consolidate schools, we don't have the capacity to fit everybody into the schools that they would go into all at the same time. So we would be running double shifting schedules, kind of back in the 80s, the people that lived through that. So obviously we wouldn't have our athletics and extracurricular programs and so on and so forth. But yeah, it would be devastating. Our school district would be unrecognizable without these dollars coming in.
Okay, and we're about out of time, but if you want to aim the voters at a good place to get more information, that would probably be the website.
You bet. So lposd.org. As Chris stated, on the left-hand side, you'll see levy information. I would like to say we have been very appreciative of the support of the community. From a statistical standpoint, on average, we have passed our supplemental levies at on average a 64% passage rate. And I thank the community and appreciate their show of support for public education.
And I just want to say, you know, we've got 6 days until this election. Be informed. Get your questions answered. If you're curious or you're concerned, please reach out and get answers. Call the district office. Email us. Any of us are interested in making sure that we have informed, educated voters, and definitely go vote on Tuesday, March 12th.
And, of course, you can get a hold of your elected representatives, which you are one, Geraldine, but there's four other trustees out there, and they're the folks that are elected to represent the voters.
Yep.
And are, in fact, are the ones that put this, even though Sean catches all the heat, that's the trustees that decide.
Trustees are all asking the voters to come forward. I will say that our emails are on the school district website, so please reach out if you have questions.
Okay. Well, Sean Woodward, Geraldine Lewis, thank you again for coming in.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And we were listening to a recorded interview with the public school, Sean Woodward, he's the superintendent, and Geraldine Lewis, she's a board trustee, about the upcoming supplemental operation levy that will be taking place March 12th. And as they say, yes, go and vote. And we're back live in the studio. This is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. And we have a new guest in the studio. We're live. And Chris, why don't you tell us?
Yes, we have Shannon Williamson. She is with the Lake Pondre Waterkeeper. And Shannon, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I'll tell you what, let's start out with give a little bit of information about what the Waterkeeper is all about. And then we want to dive in specifically to the question of the second railroad bridge.
Sure. We're a local nonprofit here in Sandpoint. We were founded in 2009. I'm currently the executive director. We're really excited to have two new staff members joining our team. We have a full-time waterkeeper now. That's Chantilly Higby. And we have a full-time communications associate, and that's Sharon Bosley. And we're just super thrilled to have them as part of the organization. It's been really wonderful.
So what does a waterkeeper do?
Our waterkeeper is really our boots on the ground, keeping our eye on everything water-related in the watershed. We know what some of our risks are, but, you know, risks emerge every single day. And so to have someone dedicated to that particular job 100% of the time is a blessing. Really excited.
And what are some of the projects that you're working on right now or things that you're watching to protect our water?
Our biggest issue that we're working on right now is the proposal by Burlington Northern Santa Fe, or BNSF, to expand rail infrastructure throughout the watershed, or specifically here in Sandpoint. And that would entail creating three new bridges in the local area here, and additional track. So it's quite a large project that they're proposing. And we want everyone to become aware of it and to get involved. And there's opportunities coming up to do that. That's what I'm here to talk about.
So are you concerned that these new proposed rail bridges, the three going across water,
mm-hmm.
pose a hazard or a threat?
Well, the bridges in and of themselves don't propose a threat, but they do facilitate an increase in rail traffic. And we know that there's, you know, quite a lot of hazardous materials that are transported through our watershed by rail. And we're concerned about the increased risk for spills and derailment and what that would do to, you know, our drinking water and our recreational lifestyle here and how we're going to deal with that.
So let's talk about this increase in rail traffic. Right now we get around 60 trains a day mm-hmm. coming through town. Famously, we're the funnel, as they call it,
yes.
because the northern tier lines all funnel down to come across right through Sandpoint. That's why we have so many trains. Trains mm-hmm. are such a fixture here. What is the projection in the increase in rail traffic?
I'm really glad you asked that question, because that's one of the serious flaws of the environmental assessment that BNSF has submitted to the Coast Guard, which is the lead permitting agency for this project. There are no numerical projections that they've included in that assessment. And that's pretty critical to analyzing many of the impacts that are discussed in that document. And so it's practically impossible to really reveal all of the risks and even the potential benefits without having those projections. So we don't know. They might know, but they're not sharing that information.
I think just based on the fact that population grows, commerce grows, mm-hmm. we would expect an increase anyways. Does the fact that a second bridge would be built across the lake, how is that going to facilitate more? Would we see natural growth in traffic anyway?
Sure. They do state, you know, that the project need is because over the last three decades, there's been a steady rise in rail traffic and demand. And they also state, which is contradictory to the first statement, that they're not really sure, you know, if this project would facilitate an increase in rail traffic because it's all market driven. But you know, we know that no company is going to invest, you know, significant sums of money and not anticipate that they're going to be moving more commerce by rail. And there was a study done in 2013 from the Idaho Statewide Rail Plan. And that study actually said that train volumes on Idaho's network are projected to increase by 143% by 2040.
Wow.
That's so just that's one figure.
Yeah, it's more than double. Yeah.
Yeah, that's just one figure. But it's incredibly important that we have just more thorough analysis of what these three bridges could facilitate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why our organization is advocating for just a much more thorough study through an environmental impact statement rather than just an environmental assessment.
Mm-hmm. So can you describe the project in a little bit more detail? When you say three bridges, of course, there's the big long bridge that goes across the lake itself, but the other bridges are going across Sand Creek.
Yep. There's going to be one that parallels the existing bridge on Sand Creek, and then similarly, basically double tracking across Bridge Street to City Beach as well.
And the bridge that's going to be built adjacent to the existing Long Bridge, train bridge, if we can call it that, where's that going to be positioned?
It's going to be right along, right next to it. I believe it's on the west side.
On the west side. So the downstream side, or the side closest to town.
I believe so.
Yes. That one impact that you can foresee is that Dog Beach would be, I don't know if, how much of that will be taken up by the new bridge.
There is some discussion of the future of Dog Beach in the environmental assessment. It doesn't definitively state that it's going to be taken out of, the hands of people that want to be able to recreate there. But they do mention that is a possibility, that access to Dog Beach could potentially go away. And that's problematic for people that, love to bring their dogs there. But it's also a site that's identified in the geographic response plan as a launch location for response to a spiller or derailment into the water. And so we think that's a serious risk that needs to be more thoroughly studied.
So are there other things that people should be kind of envisioning in their mind for this project? I suppose access roads might be necessitated.
Yeah, it's a huge project. I mean, they're proposing, three bridges plus temporary bridges, additional track over a construction period of 3 to 5 years. It's a huge deal. And there's so many things that go into this that need to be evaluated. Of course, as a waterkeeper, we're really concerned about the increased risk of derailment and spills into our water, and how we're going to address that, and how we're going to deal with additional hazardous materials coming through. But there's so many other things that need to be looked at and haven't been thoroughly analyzed in the current document. One thing that really jumped out at me immediately was that the environmental assessment stated that there really wasn't any need to look at socioeconomic impacts. So they said, it's just not even worth studying, because we think that, everything's going to be fine and that the construction will be good for local business, and we're not even going to bother looking at it, with no evidence. Nothing to back that statement up. I think that's doing a huge disservice to our community and our local business owners to just make that assumption.
Mm-hmm.
So on the face of it, there's a lot of different areas that need to be looked at in depth. And with the current document that they've placed into the public's hands, which there is a 45-day comment period on, and that comment period ends on March 25th, it just raises more questions than it answers. And at the root of the problem is, the lack of any kind of information about projected train volumes. And it just really, really warrants a thorough environmental impact statement. And we're hoping that people who are concerned with this project do weigh in. And so they have the opportunity to do that through written testimony. They can also go to one of two public hearings, which are going to take place on March 13th at the Ponderay Event Center. One's at 8 a.m. and one's at 6 p.m. And if someone is interested in testifying at one of those two hearings, they actually have to sign up in advance through the Federal Register and the Coast Guard. And so I don't have that website address handy right now, but we will have it on our website, or we do have it on our website, which is www.lpow.org. And I encourage folks to visit, to learn more about the project and learn how they can get involved to comment or attend one of these hearings.
So these hearings are actually being staged by the Coast Guard.
Yes.
Is that pertaining strictly to navigation or all issues involved?
So the Coast Guard will be, they are the agency that's tasked with permitting these bridges in terms of navigation under the Bridges Act, but they are also the lead federal agency leading environmental review. So they're in charge of NEPA, essentially. And so these two hearings that are coming up in the public comment period that's open right now is specifically about the environmental assessment.
I just want to hear that website again. It's www.lpow.org.
Yes.
Lots of information. I know you have a new website that has that kind of information, and also possibly a link to signing up to participate in the public hearing on the 13th at the Event Center in Ponderay.
Yes.
At 8 a.m. or 6 p.m.
Yes. It's really important that if anybody wants to weigh on in this project, and I really do encourage, I mean, if you're in support of it or if you're concerned about it, it's the public process and you need to get involved. We're going to be actually having a workshop in coordination with Idaho Conservation League tomorrow evening, starting at 5:15, I believe. I'm giving the presentation initially, so I'm like, did we settle on 5 or 5:15? I believe it's at 5:15 at Matchwood Brewing, and we're going to be sharing information, more detailed information about what this project entails, how people can get involved, how they can craft either written testimony or oral testimony, and just bring your questions. And we're happy to help you out in that department.
You know, I often hear that folks wonder why things are going on. Well, this is an opportunity to get informed. It's mm-hmm. the first step to being involved. So here's an opportunity that's tomorrow night?
It's tomorrow night, yep, at Matchwood Brewing, 5:15, upstairs. And I'll be given just a brief overview of what the project is, what our concerns are, what we feel are the deficiencies of the environmental analysis that have been put out into the public, and why we feel it's really important for those folks that are concerned to advocate alongside of us for an environmental impact statement, because that's what the Coast Guard is now tasked with. They have to receive public comment, analyze those public comments, and decide whether they are going to move towards a more thorough analysis and really dig into like what the potential risks could be and what the mitigation could be to address those risks, or if they're going to go the opposite direction and issue what's called a FONSI, or a finding of no significant impacts. And what's really alarming to us is that when the public notice was put out by the Coast Guard, it actually included a statement that they said they'd already tentatively decided that this project would have no significant impacts to the human or natural environment. And I think that is a travesty. It has not been thoroughly analyzed at all.
What was that based on? I mean, it's a huge project. We're talking about building an almost 2-mile-long bridge, along with a couple other bridges.
Over a period of 5 years.
Yeah.
So BNSF and their consultants drafted this environmental assessment. So, of course, it's obvious to us that the conclusions that they bring out within this document are going to support what they want to do, which is move forward with the project. But like I said, it raises many more questions than it answers. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't include nearly anywhere close to a robust analysis of the potential risks. And without going towards an environmental impact statement, there's not going to be a discussion of how we can mitigate these risks.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit more about the risks, which I think probably the prime one is the potential for hazardous materials to spill mm-hmm. into the lake, or even, I mean, there have been some horrendous accidents that involve mm-hmm. there's an entire city up in Canada that got wiped out by a huge explosion when a train derailed up there.
Right.
What do we know right now about the types of things that are hauled over the lake and through town?
It's interesting because the railroad doesn't have to disclose exactly what's being transported. And I can understand from one point why that is, because it's described that it could be a terrorist risk. If bad people knew exactly what was being transported, they could do bad things. And so I understand some of that rationale. But we do know that we have volatile Bakken crude oil that's coming through town. And railroads do have to report when there's, I believe, a 25% increase or decrease in the volume of that particular commodity that's being transported. But that's the only one. But if you are stuck at a train or, stuck at a crossing and you're just watching what's going by, sometimes it's written, on the outside of the container. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes you can look up the placard number. But we know that there is quite the variety of hazardous materials that could cause a lot of problems if they were released either into the air or the water. and we don't have a plan. We have a plan on paper, the geographic response plan, for spills of oil. And I'm thrilled that, you know, our county took that effort on a couple of years ago to update that plan. However, if you read the document, it really highlights that there's many areas around our watershed where trains are traveling either adjacent to or over water that are problematic, and we're just not in a position to really contain a spill. And mm-hmm. so we have a plan for one type of commodity that's hazardous, mm-hmm. and nothing else.
And we have seen some derailments around us. There was one up the Clark Fork River, mm-hmm. I think just last year. There was one down near Kokalala, a bunch of grain, right. just grain, but even that made quite a mess.
It yeah. was a mess, and it took a long time to clean up. And, you know, we witnessed the spill of coal in Montana, right near the border, last summer, and it was left there, you know, for a very long time, and it spontaneously combusted during a super dry, hot summer, which was extremely dangerous. So that's a concern as well. And I think there's the ability for this project to be just looked at extremely carefully, and that's what we're asking for. And I should clarify that our position as an organization, we are neutral on whether this project is going forward or not. But what we definitely want to see happen is a thorough analysis of all the risks, especially to water, and what can be done. You know, what are those risks and what can be done to protect our water?
Okay, and we're just about out of time. Shannon Williamson, Lake Pondre Waterkeeper, but why don't you throw out again, you have two meetings coming up, one's just tomorrow.
We have a workshop that we're hosting in coordination with Idaho Conservation League at Matchwood Brewing, 515 upstairs in their community room, and we encourage folks to come on out. We're going to be talking about this project more. We can hopefully answer any of your questions. And then there is a public hearing or two public hearings coming up on March 13th at the Pondere Event Center. One's at 8 a.m. and one is at 6 p.m. And you do need to sign up through the Federal Register, which we will have a link to on our website at www.lpow.org if you are interested in testifying.
And the public comment period ends March 25th.
March 25th.
But in order to make a comment, you not a lot of times need to be informed. Two opportunities right there, the 13th and the tomorrow night.
Yes. Please come out.
Okay. Well, thank you, Shannon, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And this is 88.5 KRFY. A couple things coming up, Chris, and then we'll hear a really great song also. What's your favorite radio station? Good question, right? How about that, Shannon?
I think that's an excellent question.
Well, we want to invite our listeners to take the 2019 media survey. You can get a direct link at our website at krfy.org. How's that?
Go there. And it, of course, it's for all media, local mm-hmm. media, and it's a survey that the Sandpoint Reader and Sandpoint Online puts on every year.
And I think it's only going through the end of the week.
Yep.
According to...
So if you want to get in your 2 cents, and there's opportunity to win a prize. So there's that too.
That's always fun. Yeah. We also want to let our listeners know that our community podcast presentation, part 4 of a 4-week series, Conversations on Living and Dying, presented by Lisa DeFreitas from Bonner Community Hospice, will take place March 12th. That will be the fourth week of a 4-part series. You can hear those podcasts at our website at krfy.org as they play, and the whole series will be there after March 12th. So that's something to look. It's a very good series, and it's a special community podcast. And tomorrow on the morning show, you can join Jim Healy. He will be by himself, but he won't be by himself. He'll have two guests, Brenda Hammond and Sharon McCann from the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force, because Jack Peterson will be on his way flying to some warm places. But the airtime is 8 a.m. at 88.5 KRFY.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, there are a ton of things going on around town. I'll mention one that's really pretty cool happening tomorrow, Sandpoint Community Sing. If you like to sing, there's going to be a whole group of people getting together to sing songs. That's at Downtown Yoga at 7 p.m. You could probably go there after checking out the Matchwood event with Shannon talking about the rail bridge. And there's a ton of other things going on Check out our calendars at krfy.org, the community calendars, to see a bunch of the community events, or sandpointonline.com.
We want to also invite our listeners to like us on Facebook. You will get an update on all of our who's going to be on the morning show and other things that KRFY is doing. So like us on Facebook. That's always a good thing. What else do we have, Chris? We have exactly 1 minute.
1 minute.
Come on. Okay, I can tell you a little bit, unless you have something.
Go for it.
Okay. Well, KRFY, by the way, is listener-supported, commercial-free community radio. I also want to say corporate-free for North Idaho. So you can support us by making a donation today at krfy.org. That's what nonprofits do. Need money and support and funds to keep going, and we really appreciate it. You can go to our website, again, krfy.org. There's a PayPal button. You can just make a donation. We certainly appreciate it, and we thank you for listening also.
We do, and we really appreciate the support that all of our listeners and local businesses have provided to keep a commercial-free radio going here in Sandpoint.
So, over to the festival. We've heard a few. They're releasing the names of certain evenings and guests that are going to be performing. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. And and one of the acts that's going to be performing is the Abbott Brothers.
Mm-hmm. And we have a song queued up by them for your listening pleasure. And please listen to KRFY all day long. You can hear Otto's Eclectic Mix. And this is the Abbott Brothers. It goes on and on. We hope you have a beautiful day.
Yes, bye now.
Devotion, and I let it pull me down to the floor. It goes on.